It's a numbers game with your host, Gil Alexander.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
Hour number two of a numbers game right here at VEASAN, brought to you by BetMGM. Sign up with BetMGM and get your first deposit matched up to $250. With bonus code VSID250, discover BetMGM's parlay selection features, daily promotions, and much more. Download the app today to get this exclusive offer for VSID listeners with bonus code VSID250, and they'll match your first deposit up to $250. New customer offer, paid in free bets. It's Gil Alexander. Still to come this hour, we will have Todd Wright, the greatest radio host there ever was. Todd Wright talking NFL with us. NBA Top Shot. Boy, am I old. Because I don't get it. Someone's going to have to explain it to me. We'll do that as well. And Drew Dinsick standing by here. We love talking to Drew. The highlight of every 8 o'clock hour on Tuesdays. But we get tweets at Beating the Book. I want to get through some of these. Table_Max. For longtime Lions fans, the Dan Campbell hire didn't come out of nowhere. He was actually the expected pick after he was first mentioned with the popular names a couple weeks ago. Just the Lions doing Lions things. Hashtag fire Dan Campbell.
That's how it feels.
He's already done with Dan Campbell. Hasn't done anything yet.
It's because they figure out new ways to mismanage everything the Lions do.
Well, Chris Spielman got carte blanche, didn't he?
He's the new head of the... I mean, yeah. It's a mess.
Jason H11 on Twitter. The Jason Kahn understatement of the year. 60 is a bit too many. Talking about the number of unwanted texts.
Sorry, that was... Yeah.
That were sent by the Mets' former GM. Down on the dog. Yes, thank you for recapping those Progressive commercials. LOL, point on. It's phenomenal commercials.
Great. Keep making those for a very long time, and I'll be just as happy.
They're so spot on, the little nuancy things that they've picked up on. It's so great. We don't need a sign for that. Three Jack H3131. Maybe it's not Rodgers' year unless he bucks this trend. And the trend is 13 MVP awardees also won the Super Bowl or NFL championship game prior to 1966 in the same season. However, this has not occurred since 1999 when MVP Kurt Warner won Super Bowl 34 with the St. Louis Rams. Since then, 9 AP NFL MVPs have led their team to the Super Bowl and were defeated each time. This has led to tongue-in-cheek claims in recent years that there is a curse preventing the awardees team from winning the Super Bowl. So if you buy into that kind of thing.
Something similar used to take place with the Heisman, where the Heisman winner would go into the national championship game and lose.
Yeah, that's a more well-known one, yeah. Yeah. You know, if you buy into such things, I don't, but there you go. Let's talk to the man who is the co-host of the Deep Dive podcast, along with his buddy Andy Molitor. Deep Dive with Andy and the Whale. We have the logo. There it is. Look at that thing. It's like a, what is that? What did we decide that was? Like a sound booth wall? What is that? Or is that a microphone? It's Drew Dinsick, everybody. How you doing, Drew? You can answer that question for us.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be microphone texture.
Microphone texture. All right.
Yeah.
Very nice. Powered by BetSports. How you doing, man? Let me just ask you before we get to the championship games, of course, let's look back on this past weekend. Let's start with the Chiefs, because that seems to be the one that stands out. At least to me, it does. Do you agree with my assessment that Andy Reid was all things, or Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy, however you want to slice it up, were all things at the end of that game? Ultimately, heroic, but prior to that, complete and utter lunatics.
They were playing with fire. The Chiefs have been playing with fire at the end of games for going on, what, 3 months? It's not new. But I guess if you know, so much of the analysis in the moment, so much of the analysis after the fact is results based, and the
drives
fact
me crazy.
Of the matter.
Yes.
This is always how it goes. I mean, you saw it's you almost can't be on Twitter reading people's instant reactions to this stuff because in the moment, in the exact afterglow of whatever transpires, it's so much of it is, shaded by emotion and bias and not really common sense. But the, if you want to break down the 4th-and-1 decision to go for it, how they executed it and the play they called and the fact that it was, once they snapped the ball and you realize they were actually running a play, it was pretty obvious to everyone watching, like, this has a 100% chance to succeed.
Yeah.
Right. And so much of that was just because the way they set it up and the, you know, the situation itself and, you know, a lot of people's bias expecting this is just an attempt to draw them off sides. They're actually going to punt. I mean, you know, they played it perfectly.
Let me interrupt real quick, Drew, to give station ID. It's Bill Alexander. It's Drew Dinsick. This is a numbers game right here at VSiN, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Fubo, Sling, Game Plus, and of course, iHeartRadio. Let me just, you know, the fourth down play, Drew, that's fine. Like reasonable minds, you know, we could say, if it was incomplete, then it would have been a whole different story. And it would have been because Cleveland would have had a short field and who knows what would have happened. It was the second and third down play. Plays. Those are the ones where I'm like, what in the hell are you doing? Now, by the way, to your point about like emotion and people, these are bets I won, right? So I'm talking about Rashad Higgins fumbling through the end zone. The inability of people to hold two thoughts in their heads at the same time is just staggering. So anyway, go ahead. Continue with your rant on this.
Yeah. If you just want to zero in on the fourth and one call, it was masterful. And it was especially impressive given all of the end of game blunders we've seen Andy Reid step into over the course of his career. For him to, you know, execute something to such perfection was cool to see, and congratulations to them, because I honestly, if they end up punting that and they give Cleveland one more chance the way Baker Mayfield was playing, and you know, assuming Stefanski calls the good plays on that final drive as opposed to what he called the previous drive, yes, absolutely, the Browns have a chance to go down, drive the field, and scored the game-winning touchdown. Absolutely. Now, you know, it was, you know, overall, I thought Andy Reid was, you know, calling a pretty aggressive offense with Henny out there. It was basically like, nope, this is what I'm calling, whether Mahomes or Henny's in. And, you know, he just went ahead and made it happen. And, you know, Henny made some plays. It was impressive. He played a lot better than we saw in the finale when they played the LA Chargers, that's for sure. But, you know, overall, I thought a lot of the reaction was kind of shaded by the fact that the fourth and one was executed to such perfection, and a lot was lost in the, you know, the plays that preceded that. And honestly, you can be critical of both teams. How in the world do the Browns allow a 13.5 yard scramble by Chad Henne with, you know, at third and 14? I mean, how many Chiefs games have we seen where the Chiefs, you know, run that exact play where they just clear out one side of the field for Mahomes to scramble to try to get the first down? Like, that is textbook end of game situation that the Chiefs love to do that. And the fact that the Browns weren't prepared for it was surprising. I don't think anyone reasonably thought that the Chiefs were going to throw there, because an incomplete pass stops the clock. And so it was surprising that the Browns allowed that much of a gain in the first place. And then beyond that, the previous drive by the Browns with, you know, the lack of urgency, the early down running into a stacked box, like, you know, there were some very, very poor decisions by Kevin Stefanski. You know, he acted like 4 minutes left to go in one timeout, like he had all the time in the world, and punting back to the Chiefs was, you know, he was for sure going to get the ball back. That was tough to wrap my head around too. And, you know, it just goes to show you that, like, in these high leverage games, you know, you can be a very good coach. You could be a coach of the year candidate. And these two guys are both clear coach of the year candidates. And you can still, you know, make some decisions that are, you know, highly questionable in the afterglow.
Yeah. 4th and 9 at their own 32, down 22-17, 4:23 left. That's the Stefanski punt. Also went for 1 instead of 2, down 19-9 with over 9 minutes left in the third quarter.
I do not get that one.
Yeah, didn't challenge a DeMarcus Robinson catch for a first down catch on the subsequent drive. That led to a Chiefs field goal. And, of course, to me, the biggest error, the Henny pass to Tyreek for 23 yards when it was 22-17, 1st and 10 at the KC 25. He challenged it. It was right in front of him. He challenged it. That was the first loss of timeout for the Browns that half. They subsequently lost a second timeout when it got too close to the play clock running out with just over 5 minutes left. That ended up being the decider. The fact that they just didn't have ways to stop the clock at the end. That stuff matters. And so, yeah, he had a great year, but it wasn't his best game. And I say this with all these, you know, because there's coaching vacancies and coaches are getting hired. Drew, if I'm an owner, and I don't know how I would do this, but when I'm interviewing these coaches, the only thing I ultimately care about, because a head coach can be a delegator, but the only thing I would care about with the head coach is, can you be in the moment like Sean McDermott was in that game against the Colts a couple weeks back, where you completely get context, you're present, you know exactly what you have to do. I'm going to call this timeout so that they will review this, because I know they're not going to review it if I don't call timeout. I'm going to use it. oh, yeah, the replay booth was going to do it. You can have your timeout back. And then that whole, like, use the last timeout that he got back, for, you know, as like a foul to give thing where Phillip Rivers didn't snap the ball, it went from 19 seconds to 14 seconds. That ultimately won them the game, perhaps, right? Like that. Yeah. I want that guy.
You need a pop quiz in the middle of the interview.
Maybe.
Can you even tell, though, until you put those guys in that situation, how you're going to act?
It's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, there are a lot of smart people who have gone through, what are you going to do in a critical moment? You know, like think about like military applications or, high stakes finance stuff. Like, you know, there are people who go through specific training to be able to make decisions in the moments that are, you know, the correct decision. And until you're actually there, you don't really know how you're going to respond. I don't know how you vet this sort of stuff at all. Yeah. It might not be possible. But surely, you know, you should have a plan. And you should be able to lay that out in an interview. You know, hey, oh, I'm going to delegate it to this guy, or I'm going to ask this guy to give me probabilities so that I can make the decision in an informed way. Like, that's the kind of stuff I would want to hear if I was doing an interview.
So Kansas City, Buffalo, and we're talking to Drew Dinsick from the Deep Dive Podcast, contributes to VSiN.com. Really, the podcast is spectacular, the Deep Dive Podcast. Okay, so the Chiefs get there as they do. We still don't know if it's Patrick Mahomes. Seems to be an assumption in the market that he's playing. I'm not so sure. But right now, they are 3-point favorites against the Buffalo Bills. And the Bills got there largely because, not to distill it to one or two plays, but I'm going to distill it to one or two plays, a pick six, right? A 101-yard pick six that turned it from 10-3 to what should have been at least 10-6 at the worst. Instead, it's 17-3. And then Lamar Jackson, a couple plays later, get knocked out with a concussion, which kind of Katie barred the door, although Tyler Huntley played well in relief. When you put all that in the wash, how do you feel about the AFC Championship, which is the second of the two games on Sunday?
Well, this is a better matchup for the Bills offense. I can tell you that for sure. The Ravens defense was playing at a very superlative level. The weather was a huge factor in that game as well. We haven't seen Josh Allen be especially effective passing the ball down the field in wind. So I want to excuse a lot of the Bills offense and their fact that they only scored 10 points on offense in that game. That was a lot of that was opponent based and weather factor. I think Bills are going to be a lot more lively in this one. And if you ask me, are the Bills, capable of pulling off an upset? Well, the question always comes, are you willing to back this team against the Kansas City Chiefs? They have to be able to score 30 points a game, as you are showing right now on the screen. The Bills are absolutely capable of scoring 30 points per game. That is the key in terms of, are you going to be able to hang with a team like the Chiefs? Because they're going to potentially hit home runs on you. And I don't 100% love the matchup of the Bills defense against the Chiefs offense, especially if Mahomes is out there. Although I do wonder if Mahomes is as dynamic as we have seen him in his past playoff success, based on the fact that he clearly had a limiting toe injury in that Browns game. And I don't think that necessarily heals and is 100% in 1 week. This is all, of course, assuming he even goes. I think you're right. The market hanging a Kansas City -3 right now, that to me tells you that the market says it's about a 90% chance Mahomes goes. If they were 100% sure, it would be 3.5. If they were 50-50, this would be closer to a pick 'em. And I think it's 90% that he goes is optimistic. At this point, at least it's Tuesday, he's got to go through the entire concussion protocol. And honestly, in the moment when you saw him, walking off the field with the Bambi legs, I was like, whoa, this might be kind of serious. I definitely did not expect them to, come out after the fact and have all of this, rumor swirling and reports from unnamed sources saying that, oh, it was just a neck stinger. It wasn't really neurological or it wasn't a true concussion. That's surprising to me that that's what they're going with. I definitely thought that it looked more serious in the moment. So maybe I'm closer to 50-50, but either way, I think the Bills are a fair shot here.
Did you do the thing? I don't know if you did this, Jason, or if you did, Drew, where I kept running back the Mahomes play, and I was like, okay, did his head crash into the ground?
Yeah.
Did it? I kept looking for it. I was like, well, it kind of landed on his own wrist, and just to the eye. And listen, we're not doctors, and anything can happen on any given play. We don't have to see it with our eyes, but it wasn't that obvious, was it? Like, what happened there?
Not to me, for sure. Yeah. I when he got up and his legs were kind of weak, I almost thought he had a leg injury. I couldn't really tell what was going on, because for sure in the moment it was not an obvious head injury. But who knows with this stuff? You know, it was a violent play, and you know, something obviously happened to him. I hope he's okay. Obviously, the entertainment value of the AFC Championship game goes up an order of magnitude if Mahomes is out there instead of Henny. This is a very competitive game if he is, my gut is still to look for potential value to bet against the Chiefs, because the market, if and when Mahomes is confirmed, this is going to Chiefs -3.5, and at that point that will have a surcharge on the Chiefs, not just because Mahomes is a little bit potentially limited with the foot, but because the Chiefs in general, the market still is overweighting the fact that this team won the Super Bowl last year. And in reality, they haven't been playing to the same level or even close on offense or defense. And to some degree, there is a little bit of a blueprint in terms of how you prevent Mahomes from, scoring home runs against you, basically. Like, you make him be more efficient, make him drive the field, eat more of the clock, that it becomes more of a lower scoring game, a one score game. We saw the Browns execute it well. We saw the Falcons execute it well. We've seen really since the Bucks Chiefs game second half on, a lot of defensive coordinators have rolled out the same approach. I would expect the Bills and Leslie Frazier to do the same. So the under 53.5, if you want to grab that now, makes a ton of sense, because if Mahomes is surprise out, this number is crashing to 47, maybe lower. And even if Mahomes is in, I think this probably goes back up to 54-ish, and reasonably, both teams, I think, are capable of scoring, but we really haven't seen it in the playoffs. And, to some degree, I think the Bills would like to keep this a lower scoring game to give them a better chance.
Did you, in fact, make that bet, Drew?
Already? I have under 54 already.
Under 54.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
NFC, which is the game that precedes this, but let's talk about this last week. Green Bay beats the Rams on Saturday. Look, I mean, Green Bay, at least in the iteration that the Rams came in on Saturday, just the better football team, right? We had a diminished Aaron Donald, clearly. And then Cooper Kupp, of course, was a late, even though we kind of, if you read the tea leaves, didn't look like he was going to play. And sure enough, it was announced officially that he wasn't. And so that line went from 6.5 to 7. And the Rams the Rams hung around. I won't say that they didn't, but ultimately the Packers outlasted them. I mean, did you read that game that way, generally speaking?
100%. Yeah. You set this up well. The only interesting game to really talk about from a breakdown standpoint was Browns Chiefs. This one was straightforward.
Yeah.
Packers were better and they beat them soundly.
What about, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And your points are correct in that. I still don't 100% understand why there was market support for the Rams all week last week.
I don't get it either.
That's still a head scratcher. Similarly with the under in hindsight, it's none of the handicapping angles that were really widely talked about and, focused on throughout the week last week had any impact at all in this game.
Even like weather reports in Buffalo, right? Like, yeah, we're like, oh, 8 mile per hour winds. Like, we can only say what we read with weather reports. We don't have Dopplers in our backyard, right? And sure, then you get there and Al Michaels is like, if it's 8 mile per hour winds, I'm an astronaut. The goalposts were moving, right? I mean, and Tucker missed two, he doinked two, Bass missed two field goals. Tampa Bay, New Orleans, let me just ask you real quick about that. By the way, Matt LaFleur did have the game plan of the weekend, though. Like that running attack was brilliant to do that.
Absolutely.
Tampa Bay, New Orleans, look, Tampa Bay ends up winning 30-20. But it's a +4 in turnovers, three of which led directly to touchdowns for the Buccaneers, three Saints turnovers, two picks, and one Jared Cook fumble. And then the third and final Drew Brees pick was just the clincher, and the Bucs just had to just run out the clock. That entire game was turnovers. As we've been saying, there's really not a whole bunch more to talk about if you have just that one line item in the box score. So do you come away from that game more of, hey, look at the Bucs, they're awesome, or more just the Saints and Drew Brees' inability to stretch the field, more of a testament to how flawed the Saints were than a brilliant performance by the Bucs, or is it a little of both, as is the case?
No,
most?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both for sure, but ultimately Breeze limitations in the downfield passing game, which has been their, you know, their Achilles heel going on 3 years, ended up being the difference maker in this game. The Bucs were able to cheat on defense. They were able to double down on the short stuff. They were able to, you know, contain Kamara because they weren't really afraid of anything coming over the top. And in fact, the one time they ran the trick play, we trotted Jameis Winston out there, the Bucs looked like they were not prepared for that at all. You take that, you know, if you're a little bit more prepared for that play, I think that, you know, that you're this Bucs defense is holding the Saints under 20 pretty comfortably. Now, on the other side of the ball, Tom Brady was spectacular. He was extremely efficient in this game. His offensive line got, you know, they got beat a couple of times early in this contest, but eventually they found their form and, you know, gave him a clean pocket, and he picked apart the Saints defense down the field. It was very, very exciting to see because he's got, you know, guy's 43 years old. You know, you don't expect to see that level of play out of a quarterback that's this old, but he was excellent. And, you know, the stat line may not look impressive, but my honest takeaway was Brady is succeeding in this offense in spite of the coaching. The coaching decisions, the sequencing, the approach overall, I did not like. I do not think Arians and Byron Leftwich are putting this team in position to succeed as easily as they could, considering how diverse their weapons are and how just, you know, all the mismatches they have on the field. Brady seems to be succeeding in spite of that. And I would, expect that, you know, Brady and company are going to be a very tough test for the Green Bay Packers. But this game sets up from a game state standpoint that I think is pretty straightforward. And I'm interested to hear your opinion.
Yeah, hold on to that thought. We'll get 5 more minutes with Drew. We'll get his thoughts on how he would bet the Bucks and the Packers, the first of the 2 championship games on Sunday. And then again, we got Todd Wright still to come, and Top Shot, NBA Top Shot. We got to talk about this real quick. I is old. Someone's going to have to explain this one to me.
Maybe Drew can.
Maybe Drew can. Yeah, let me see. Maybe he's hip to it. We'll come back.
It's not old.
We'll ask Drew. Coming back right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
To A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Back on A Numbers Game, just like the Flatter Man said, it's Gil Alexander. It's all brought to you by BetMGM Nevada, by the way, y'all. Drew Dinsick is our guest, kind enough to stick around for 5 more minutes here from the Deep Dive Podcast. Before we get into your thoughts on the game itself between the Packers and the Bucks, the Bay of Pigs, as Chris Berman used to call it, NBA Top Shot. What do you remember that when he used to say Bay of Pigs?
I forgot about that.
Are you familiar with NBA Top Shot?
Yeah.
Are you all about it? Like, what's your stance on it?
I'm not a collectibles guy in general. I understand why some people are looking at the current state of our economy and the long-term, you know, source of, you know, you want to store wealth in something that is scarce. And so, you know, people are buying playing cards. You probably know a lot of people. There's a lot of people in Vegas who are into this.
Oh, I was a big card collector.
Sure.
But like, that's a tangible item, right?
It's a tangible item, but for sure, think about, okay, well, we want to take this tangible item. We want to make it digital, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is, you know, you make it digital and you can copy it infinity times.
Correct.
And it holds no value.
Yes.
Right. Well, these guys have figured out a way. Okay, well, we can make these unique digital trading cards effectively that are, you know, that can't be, you know, can't be copied. They're unique. And I get it. You know, a digital card with a highlight on it, like, that is, you know, potentially cooler than just holding a piece of paper with a picture on it. But I don't 100% know why these first generation ones are going to hold value necessarily. I can see in the future, 10, 20 years, you know, VR becomes, you know, even more part of, you know, the everyday lifestyle, and you have like an actual, clip that you can engage with, you know, in a more tactile way. Then yeah, maybe a digital trading card is more sought after. But these ones are, you know, I don't see the scarcity in these because you can just go watch these clips on YouTube.
Well, okay, so. This is what I was getting at. Do you have one more segment in you? Because I'll just kill the Top Shot thing right here.
For sure.
Okay, so what we're talking about is, and this was just made aware, I was just made aware of this in the last couple of days too. So I was we were talking about Mickey Mantle 1952 Topps baseball card being sold last week for over $5 million. I was a big baseball card collector and how auctions have just been going crazy in the collectibles and the card collectibles during the pandemic. So this is NBA Top Shot. It's a blockchain platform for NBA licensed digital collectible highlights, which by December had already seen over $5 million spent on its platform. And now, I mean, at this point, and here's the title of this article, LeBron James highlights are selling for over $20,000 a shot, how a company called NBA Top Shot sells exclusive and original memorabilia and merchandise. So cue all, whenever we see a big NBA highlight now, everybody's always making the joke on Twitter now, I'm going to own this one day, right? So people are quote unquote owning highlights and then they trade them, but they don't really own it because the NBA still does, right? And like you just pointed out, I can still go to YouTube and see Zion dunking or LeBron dunking. So that's the part, like those of us who grew, you know, who are like, well, this is the part. I prefaced this morning, Drew, by saying I am now officially old because I don't get, like, that's the part I don't get. But apparently, listen, I know of very sharp bettors who are all in on this stuff.
Of course. And get, you know, this is gen one of something that eventually will become something cool, probably. Right. In 10, 20 years, I can entirely see, oh, my gosh, like there is an entire collectible universe around like amazing things that have happened in sports that you can only, you know, you can only engage with if you have, you know, some, you know, piece of, you know, some piece of merchandise that the league creates for you. But this current round of them don't look special to me at all. So I'm not exactly sure why they are going to accrue value other than the fact that they're Gen 1.
Or is Gen 5
of these could be amazing.
Or is it the opposite, Drew? Or is Gen 1 the only one that's... I mean, you know, you could look at it two ways, right? Or is this just a... You know, by the way, that they say, Top Shot, 65% of the revenue, 65% is direct sales of the highlight packs, 95,000 plus packs sold already. The remaining 35% is marketplace volume from secondary market trading, which I guess they get something off each trade, I'm guessing. I don't know. I think that's what that might mean. But 35% of their revenue is from that. Fascinating.
Yeah.
YouTube rights, maybe the House of Highlights, maybe they are going to pull them off in 10 years and then they won't be on YouTube. And you know, I don't know how those rights licenses work, but if I was the NBA, that's the move, is just to take them off YouTube in 10 years.
It's brilliant. Either way, it's brilliant by the NBA, huh, Drew?
It is, but it for sure they're creating money out of nothing. But literally in Gen 5, like whatever the technology is, it's going to be better than now. They could re-release these, you know, archived ones, and they're going to look cooler and better. And I just don't know that these are going to hold value.
It's fascinating. We have somebody behind the glass, Jason, over here at VEASAN, who is in this. I'm not worried about the sharp guys I know who are in it. I'm worried about him because I don't know.
It's risky.
You know, it's fascinating. What an interesting world. We'll come back. We will talk NFC Championship and how Drew is betting the Packers and the Bucks next right here on VEASAN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game with Gil Alexander.
If you're betting $22 hoping that meaningless free throw rims out or begging for two goals and extra time to hit that miracle 14 parlay, we have a suggestion. Take $22 and invest it in your sports betting success. Become a VEASAN All Access member today and get all of our expert VEASAN betting analysis for less than $22 per month. Daily emails, 24/7 video access, point spread weekly, and betting 101 strategy guides. It's everything you need to increase your sports betting IQ. Place a bet on yourself right now. Start your free trial today at VEASAN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate it. Bill McNeil. Hey, Gil, who is this Katie person and why does she keep barring the door? It sounds like she has issues. # kitten caboodle. He listens very closely, Bill. Thank you, Bill. Sayings, phrases from the south of the 80s. Mike Zills, Duke 90. Chris Vernon and some NBA TV host explained Top Shots on his show a couple weeks ago, or 1 or 2 weeks ago, but I don't get it either, says Mike Zills, Duke 90. Drew Dinsick is with us from the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with his buddy Andy Molitor. Must podcast listen. Must listen. All right, NFC Championship then. How does this shake out for you? Bucks and Pack? I thought this would, you know, when I was guessing these, I thought the Pack would be 3-point favorites. It was 3.5 yesterday. And I thought the Chiefs would be 3.5 if it's going to be Mahomes. It ended up being 3. I am seeing the Pack come down to 3 where I am seeing it going up, rather, to 3.5 now in some spots. So that's sort of coming my way. Hmm. Wait, did I have it opposite? Anyway, ultimately, I was off a half point on each.
Yeah, ultimately, I think this lands at 3. Ultimately, there's not a ton of space between these two teams. You know, if you were to put this in a completely neutral game state, this probably ought to be about a pick'em. The fact that it's in Lambeau, the fact that this is the Bucks' third road game, the fact that the Pack are like 100% healthy and the Bucks are dealing with a couple of injuries, all of that tilts it a little bit in favor of Green Bay. So if you want to make it 2.5, 3, that's fine. Anything over 3.5, I think you are going to draw some Buccaneers money just on a number standpoint. Now, and when we talk about the way that this game is likely to play out, you brought it up in the previous segment when we were talking about Green Bay's game plan against the LA Rams. It was perfect. And guess what? Matt LaFleur is, we have a very strong signal now over 2 years. He comes out with a game script that is tailored to perfection to take advantage of what the other team's plan A is on defense. And I would expect nothing less in this game, especially because Buccaneers have a plan A on defense that can be exploited. They're very aggressive. You can trick them into, using motion, using play action. You can absolutely trick this team into biting on short stuff and then attack them over the top. And my guess is that's going to be the Packers' plan A. I think that will work. I think the Packers can generate a lead in this one. And at that point, this becomes an entire game about, can Tom Brady pull off the comeback? And so I think, rather than really get heavily involved pre-flop here on the Buccaneers, I'm looking for Brady and company down 2 scores at a really favorable in-game line, in-game price, because I think they have the tools to pull off a comeback. I don't think that the Packers are going to be able to play keep away. I don't think they're going to be able to lean on the run when their script runs out. The Buccaneers have a very stout run defense. I think the Buccaneers have explosive weapons in the passing game. And when they go off script and this becomes a read the defense, make the key decision, use audibles, use adjustments at the line of scrimmage, Brady excels at all of these things. And so I think the realistic game state here is Packers generate a lead based on their outstanding game script. Buccaneers come back and make this a game. I think the over is in play at 51. I would personally have made this a 55-point game given the strength of these two offenses. I know weather is potentially a factor. It may be cold, a little bit of wind, and potentially snow on Sunday, which would be exciting and fun to watch.
Yes.
But that doesn't hurt points, in my opinion. And I think, Buccaneers, obviously Brady's played a lot of, playoff football in those type of conditions. So we shouldn't expect a decline in performance from him. The players around him, obviously, they've been living in Florida for a while. They'll probably be a little out of their comfort zone, but I don't think enough to really tilt the scales that much in favor of Green Bay here. Ultimately, I think the Packers win this, but it's going to be very close. And I think you're going to get an in-game price north of 7.5 on the Buccaneers at some point in the first half. If you want to attack this pre-flop, I'm looking for a Packers first quarter play. I'm looking for a Packers first half play. Ooh. And I'm looking for over 51.
Interesting. I like the Packers here. By the way, it was 3 that I guess the Packers, 3.5 on the Chiefs. Green Bay weather forecast, as you pointed out, high 20s expected at kickoff. Fahrenheit, we're talking here, for those of you in Canada. And precipitation 50%. So yeah, could be a bit of snow, but as you said, wind is what we're really looking at. That's 7 miles per hour, and again, unless it's a Buffalo situation, that's nothing to care about necessarily. Let me just ask you this, and I asked this yesterday on after guessing lines, but thought I'd bring it up. I don't think it means anything, but I'm curious if you do. Both of these games, these teams played each other. The Green Bay-Tampa Bay game was a little more memorable because Green Bay went up 10-0, then it was a pick six, then it was almost a pick six, might as well have been, got to the 2, and it was just a rout. Tampa Bay routed Green Bay, easily Aaron Rodgers' worst game of the year statistically. Tampa Bay won that 38-10, and then there was that quirky Buffalo-Kansas City game, which as we were going through yesterday, I was like, I don't even remember this game, and we realized as we were talking about it, oh yeah, because that was the first of the 2 on a Monday. It was like a 2 p.m. Pacific start. Kansas City ended up winning that. The simple question is, do either of those outcomes mean anything here for your handicap?
No, not really. I mean, the Buccaneers-Packers game was very unique. As you mentioned, the pick six really flipped that game on its head. Although I think you can see a very similar game state where the Packers have a lead and the Buccaneers come roaring back. Now, I don't expect, you know, Aaron Rodgers to throw three picks in this game and make this, you know, because once that game got out of hand for the Packers, they pretty much packed it in. They weren't really coming away with, you know, they weren't really thinking of nuanced ways to get back into that game. They just basically threw their hands up. In this game, I would expect that, you know, if something goes sideways on them, they do come back with some wrinkles, some adjustments, and try to fight back. Now, the Kansas City Buffalo game is interesting in that Buffalo basically, they were hurting on defense. They were really concerned about getting beat over the top, and they were the first team that was basically like, Kansas City, you want to run on us? We will give you the run. Just do not throw the ball on us. And the Chiefs said, okay, fine. And they, you know, team rushing was like 300 yards for them in that game. They basically just played keep away all game. We never really saw Josh Allen really find his comfort in that spot. And it was a weird scheduling spot too, given that the Bills had played the previous week against the Titans and that game had gotten moved around until like Tuesday. So that one was a weird game that I would throw out as well. Although I do think that the success that Kansas City had on the ground in that game is a portent for, you know, them having, you know, Darrell Williams, for instance, his rushing props probably going to be light. They're going to be able to run on this Bills team and the Bills are going to invite that. So I think it's going to be, it's going to be two close games. I think both of these are going to come down to who can prevent the key mistake, the key turnover, who can end, you know, execute end of game offense. But I do think that we stay under the total in Kansas City. We go over the total in Green Bay. And I think, you know, you can expect a pretty likely, game state of Green Bay gets out to an early lead and Tampa Bay comes roaring back.
All right, there it is. As thorough as it gets, over Green Bay, under in the AFC Championship at Kansas City Buffalo, Green Bay first quarter, Green Bay first half, if I recall the deets. Correctly. Drew, always appreciate it. Same time next week, sir.
Outstanding. Best of luck, man.
My man. Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper. Should have mentioned that earlier. @whale_capper. Part of the Deep Dive podcast with Andy Molitor. We'll come back. Todd Wright from right outside of Tampa talking with us about the championship games, both conferences, as a matter of fact. Maybe get some golf thoughts from him as well. Coming back right here on the Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander.
Sign up with BetMGM and get your first deposit matched up to $250 with bonus code VSIN250. Discover BetMGM's parlay selection features, daily promotions, and much more. Download the app today to get this exclusive offer for VSIN listeners with bonus code VSIN250, and they'll match your first deposit up to $250. New customer offer, paid in free bets.
Paid and free bets. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. Colorado, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, New Jersey, Nevada, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, or West Virginia only. Excludes Michigan disassociated persons. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700 in Colorado or Nevada. 1-800-GAMBLER in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. And 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. In Tennessee, call or text the red line at 1-800-899-9789. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. Promotional offer not available in Nevada.
We're going to have to work on the pickup on that.
I was a little lost at the beginning.
Yeah, we'll get better. Ladies and gentlemen, he's the greatest radio host there ever was. I will not be debated on this subject. He was the host of the classic radio show All Night with Todd Wright back in the day on ESPN Radio. I used to listen to it religiously as I used to race back in San Francisco from a slow jam shift. And would just sit there listening in my car parked in my apartment because he was that good. Now he's got the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast, the Todd Wright Toddcast, and of course, for all things golf-wise in the Central Florida area, he's your guy. It's Todd Wright, everybody. How you doing, Todd?
Good morning, Gil Alexander. I have not spoken to you since the fantasy football season ended with the Alvin Kamara Christmas miracle.
Yeah, the 6 touchdowns. Do you know anybody who had him who ended up losing their championship game?
I solicited that on my podcast, did a special podcast just for Alvin Kamara because the game was first that week. Yes, there was a listener of my podcast who stepped up. Ironically, he also lives in Tampa. I've never met him, never spoken to him before, was never aware of him. He said he took a step in the right direction because the guy who had Kamara had Matt Stafford going in the early game the next day. So that was another quarterback who was out after one series. So that allowed him to gain 15, 20 points right there. But he ended up winning in a blowout, and having Stephon Diggs that week didn't hurt him either. So he won a tremendously high-scoring game, but having Diggs at the end and the Kamara owner having Stafford gave him a chance, and he did win in spite of going up against Kamara. So there was one example.
Wow. Wow. That's amazing. Okay. Before we get to, by the way, before we get your football thoughts here, because I know you have a bet riding, have you been following early season golf? We have a gentleman here on the network, Brady Cannon, who does a golf show, Long Shots, who hit Kevin Na 55-1 the other day in Hawaii. We also had another guy here who had Brendan Steele at 150-1. Brendan Steele had a 3-shot lead going into the back nine, and he goes, "I'm going to lose this. He's going to choke it away." Have you been playing DFS, Todd, early season?
I have, and I tripled my money this weekend because my number 6 bargain player was Mike Weir.
Oh, my goodness.
He made the cut. I think he finished in a tie with the guy used in my one-and-done league, which I play for charity via the Valspar Championship. I think Weir finished the same 10-under as Ryan Palmer, who I also had on my DraftKings team, but I also had in my one-and-done league. Weir has been playing significantly better, and I thought was a great bargain on a gettable golf course for him that doesn't favor long hitters. So, yeah, I have been following along. I'm still doing my homework for the American Express this weekend. Just happy the golf season is back. And looking ahead, this is way down the road for the golf geeks. There will be no World Golf Championship in Mexico on a high-scoring course with a lot of horses for courses action. It is moving to a wonderful, extremely private property just south of me in Sarasota called the Concession in March. So there will be a true Florida swing, and the World Golf Championship will not go to Mexico in March.
The Concession. I like that. Mike Weir, who won the Masters during the Eisenhower administration, I believe. No, 2003.
It was a long time ago, wasn't it?
2003.
But he made the cut at the Masters a couple of months ago. He made the cut.
Yeah.
If you bet Mike Weir is the top left-hander, you cash the ticket. I know at one shop, he was 20-1 to win his top left-hander. There were only 4 lefties in the field.
Nice. Well done, Todd Wright. Todd Wright, DFS golf, staple of what he does. You also, you made a NFL futures bet in March. What was that?
March 1, Green Bay Packers to win NFC Championship. Where I bet it, it opened at 20-1 roughly a month and a half before. So it had already been bet down a little bit. You have Aaron Rodgers. You have a team coming off an NFC Championship. I get that people were on it, that the price looked too high. But yeah, on March 1st, I got Green Bay at 10-1. So that's what I'm sitting on for Sunday.
What is your strategery as you head into this game?
Yeah, I never used to do this, Gil. I was the guy who had the Cardinals that I think, I'm trying to remember, maybe the Cardinals were 50-1. I bet them around the Super Bowl the year before they won the World Series in either 2011 or 2012 when Nelson Cruz didn't sell out in Game 6 at the Wall.
2013. In the ninth inning. I believe.
And David Freese hit the famous Joe Buck walk-off, "We will see you tomorrow night," in honor of his dad. I didn't hedge that on the Cardinals, and many said I was dumb. Well, I ended up cashing the whole thing. I don't do that anymore. So, yeah, I'm thinking it would be smart to take the Bucks money line the best I can get it to just have a return on my investment. So that's what I'll probably do with my hedge. And get the Bucks money line at the best number I can get. I ask you, Gil Alexander, not only what you're seeing it at now, but what might be the ceiling on the Bucks money line between now and kickoff Sunday?
It's a good question. By the way, 2011 was the correct date for the St. Louis Cardinals. One of the most underrated series and games, that Game 6, Game 7, the most underrated, you know, World Series outcomes, I think, in the history of World Series, because everything else gets like in lore. Oh, shot heard round the world. Jeter, Mr. November. I mean, pick your World Series, the Mets. No one ever talks about that 2011. It was just incredible.
I remember where I was, and that's like Yeah. Pretty rare for me to remember where I was during a World Series moment.
Tampa Bay right around.
Maybe because we're not talking about household names.
Right.
Nelson Cruz, David Freese. We're not talking about Derek Jeter. We're not talking about Kirk Gibson. We're not talking about the Bash Brothers. Maybe that's why.
It's plus 155. I think you might be right about that, Todd. It's plus 155-ish right now on the Bucks. I'll be honest with you. I don't think it gets much higher than that.
I agree, because we all know that Brady and the Bucks have been popular with bettors throughout the season. They obviously have no reason to be down on them now based on the way they've been performing the last month plus. So, yeah, I just wondered if you might see it getting up to 160, 165. But, yeah, I don't see it going much lower, do you?
No. I think it's going to stay. I think it's three. It's not going through the three. There's no way. Three and a half, you know, where it is currently, you know, you can make a case for that, but it's going to be three or three and a half by the time this game starts. I mean, if you didn't have the bet, let's just pull it back for a second. You live in the greater Tampa area. How do you feel about this football game, period? How do you see it going?
Well, I wouldn't hedge if I didn't feel the Bucs had a chance.
Right.
And I felt strongly that a lot of things were in New Orleans' favor against Tampa Bay, but I could make a strong case for the Bucks. Drew Brees had a bad game. Todd Bowles did mix up his coverages, very creatively used Devin White. The turnover margin was enormous in the game. And it didn't stun me that Tampa Bay won it and how they won it. I actually didn't play the game itself because I could just make a case on either side. So I can certainly make the case for the Bucks this week. Referencing the previous meeting, it was one of the oddest games I've ever seen, but I've seen Green Bay do this too often. And Gil, you probably talked about it with a number of people, you know, and on the show. Green Bay just has really dog games and they kind of come out of nowhere. Like last year's NFC Championship, a couple years ago in Atlanta, when the Falcons went to the Super Bowl. And when things go bad for the Packers, they don't fight back. It's one of the things to me, other than Aaron Rodgers has gone to one Super Bowl and won only one Super Bowl. It's like, you know, Patrick Mahomes last year went 5-0 in games where he was down 10 points. The rest of the league was 11%. So that builds the Patrick Mahomes legend that continues to grow. Where is Aaron Rodgers in that category? As much as he's respected as one of the best of all time, why do you only have one Super Bowl? Why in games where things go bad can you not put the team on your shoulders and bring them back? And I saw the Packers, and I'll say it, quit in that meeting earlier this year against the Bucks. They quit. And it looked like even Aaron Rodgers told Brady in the handshake after the game something to that effect, because Brady looked stunned with Rodgers' first words. I'm still trying to find out what happened. The Packers went from a 10-0 lead to a pick six, and they never scored another point. I think the Bucs scored the next 38, and the second half wasn't even worth watching. The game was over. So I considered that an outlier until the Bucs mixed up their coverages and held an opposing quarterback to under 75%, which they hadn't. The average was 75% completion rate in their five losses this year. So I definitely give the Bucs a chance in that game, but as I told you in one of your other guests has already said, the Bucks notoriously start slow. The Packers start fast. They've even started fast. Remember the Carolina game a month ago?
Yeah, I was just going to reference
fast,
that.
They never did anything else, and Carolina ended up covering on kind of a curious number that opened low. So that's why, in addition to my hedge on the Bucks money line, I will play the Packers laying 2.5 in the first half.
Yeah, that was that mid-December game against the Panthers where the Packers were way up at the half, and then Carolina outscored them 13-3 in the second half, and Green Bay only ended up winning 24-16. I remember Aaron Rodgers being frustrated after that second half of play. But simpatico between Drew Dinsick and Todd Wright, both like the Packers early first half in that ballgame. Todd, always great to chat with you. We'll do it again soon. Maybe talk a little hockey next time.
That sounds great, Gil. Thanks for having me on today.
My man, Todd Wright from the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast, the greatest radio host there ever was. All Night with Todd Wright. Appreciate it. Appreciate it from him, from Drew Dinsick. Glad we could talk a little Top Shot with him. Still quirky. Dan Bespris, Andy McNeil, everybody. Good luck with all your bets in basketball and hockey today. Not much basketball, but whatever you got. Lombardi, top of the hour, right here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.